Go ahead and just do test. Okay, we're good.
We're good.
We had a slight technology problem. I think we got that resolved. But we did miss in recording an item, so I'm going to go back and redo one of the items, which was the approval of the meeting's agenda. So, Mrs. Reese, if you want to make your motion again.
I move that we modify the agenda to remove item number 11 as the property owner has removed their application.
Okay. Motion has been made. Is there a second?
I second that.
Mrs. Anderson seconds it. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is unanimous. Thank you. Move on to public comments. Daniel, can you grab the sign-in sheet? I didn't see it when I was there, but could have been. All right. Mrs. Conkey, do you want to speak now?
Sure.
Please, go ahead. And you have 3 minutes. Go right ahead.
Thank you. My name is Sherry Conkey. I live at 4221 West Oak Road North. Regarding the move on number 11, rezoning public facility land here Oak Road, it now seems clear to me that you all value parks, trails, and those assets that bring our citizens closer to nature. I appreciate all the work you do in providing the parks that we have today. When John and I moved here last year, I was so taken by the setting that Cedar Hills is in. It's a beautiful place, tucked up under Mahogany Mountain, close to the canyon and away from the freeways. We're happy to have deer and quail roaming about. I see now that our city leaders know how to help us live up to the environment and scenery of Cedar Hills. Thank you. And to the city administrators, Chandler and Colleen, thank you for all the time you took to research the history and the legalities of the Hillside parcel. I'm sure it made you very grateful for digitalized records now. Again, I appreciate how this is working out. I'm really happy with today's outcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Conkey. Mr. Ellsworth, you want to speak now?
Yeah.
Come on. And we will, if you can state your name and your address.
Sure. Ben Ellsworth. I'm at 10632 Bermuda. I've got a comment to make about the new construction on Cottonwood Road, especially the construction there. I don't know if there's anything the city can do, but I'd encourage the city to look into ways to make that road a little bit safer as we have construction ongoing. It's very tight with cars parked on both sides, especially the construction vehicles. And then at night, it's very difficult to see coming around that corner where this house has been put in. So I'd like to propose or suggest that the city look into some sort of lighting. Those are the two comments I have.
Thank you very much. We will look into that. And thank you for the information. Okay. Those are all of the people. Mr. Hunt, come on up. You can state your name, address, and you've got 3 minutes as well.
I just need a minute. Thank you. My name is John Carney. I live at 4221 West Oak Road North, right here in Cedar Hills. I'm just here to express a moment of appreciation to each and every one of you, especially to Chandler for the efforts he put forth on this Hillside project. He dealt deep, found the records, found the history. He shared it with us very willingly. He put up with all the complaints, questions, and community clamor that a guy could stand, and he came through it. And we are sure appreciative of him. Also, Mayor Beattie, we really appreciate you and the time you took on our Thursday morning chats for our group and for us personally. We found you to be very transparent and honest up front and a real stand-up guy. And we know that this community is going to long remember your efforts. And to the new members who are newly elected to their positions, and all of you that's going to serve after the first of the year, best wishes for the issues and the things that will come up that you may resolve them successfully. Thank you very much. Thank you for
your kind words, Mr. Charlie. Was there anyone else who did not get a chance to sign up but does want to take some time in public comments? If not, and I'll close this part of our meeting, and we will move forward. Next item is our reports, presentations, and recognitions. This is our youth city council introduction to members, and they're going to be given an oath. So If you guys wouldn't mind standing up, I'm going to have you come forward, all the YCC members. And before you are sworn in, if you just come to the mic, just tell us who you are. And if you have something you want to say about your involvement with YCC and what your thoughts are, we really appreciate what you guys do. And there's some events that we could do without you. So we want to give you some recognition. So one by one.
I'm Mikhail McIntyre. I'm the Union City Mayor. And I just like to express my gratitude for the Union City Council. It's been such an awesome opportunity to be involved with kind of the behind the scenes of the city, and that's really fun. And I really appreciate all that our guys have been doing to help us be successful. So
thank you, Mayor.
I'm Holly Morphigas.
I'm Ethan Rasmussen, and I just want to say thanks for this opportunity.
Hi, I'm Tyson Agassiz, and I also just want to thank for allowing me to be on this amazing group.
I'm Kylie Wonder, and I just like to express my appreciation to all the advisors that help us move on with this.
Hi, I'm Lydia Pope, and I just can't wait to get started and see what we get up, and I'm happy to do this work. Thank you.
She's cute.
I'm China Harlow, and I'm so grateful to be a part of these great group of teenagers that can try to make a difference.
Thank you.
I'm Sam.
Julia LaFaro, and I'm grateful to be a part of this team.
I didn't hear what you said.
I'm Sadie Finch, and I'm grateful for you guys and for you guys making CBS so great.
Thanks, Sam.
Hey, Melissa Nicole, and I just thank you.
I'm Alex Chia.
I'm Kylie Fromm, and I'm just excited to be on City Council.
Hi, my name is Paige Prosser. I'm so grateful to the advisors and the youth and all the work they put in, and you guys for all the work you put in and how much you guys care about the city.
Thank you very much. I believe that's everyone. We do want to recognize our advisors, so if the advisors wouldn't mind standing, we appreciate that. Thank you, Stephanie and Amy. All right, Ms. Mulkey, she's going to swear you guys in. So.
I'll come over there since you guys are mostly over here. Parents can see you. So we're just going to do it in a group. So all you're going to do is raise your right hand. And then you're going to repeat after me, except for when I say state your name. Say your name. Okay, ready?
I
solemnly swear.
You solemnly swear.
That I will support, obey, and defend.
That I will support, obey, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of this state.
The Constitution of this state.
The laws. Of the city of Sierra Hills.
The laws and ordinances of the city of Sierra Hills.
The bylaws of the U City Council.
The bylaws of the U City Council.
And that I will discharge the duties.
And that I will discharge the duties.
Of my office.
Of my office.
With fidelity.
With fidelity.
Thank you. I'm going to give these to Stephanie, and then you'll all be able to give them and give them that after that, okay? Thank you.
Thank you, guys. I hope you have a great time. Okay. Our next item is public hearing. This is item number 5. It's an amendment to the city code, Title 10, Chapter 7, Section 2, relating to building funds. Has anyone come to speak for the public hearing on this item? Now we just need to speak if you have it. Doesn't look like it, so we'll close that part of our meeting. and move on to our consent agenda. Looks like there is minutes from September 19th, 2017 meeting, the October 3rd, 2017 meeting, the October 17th, 2017 work session and city council meetings. And then there's also the appointment of Barry Halstead to the Beautification Parks, Trails, and Citizens Advisory Committee. So if someone would like to make a motion on a consent agenda, I will take that.
I just have one change on the minutes. On council meeting September 19th, 2017, when we're talking about the YCC, it says that suggests reaching out to the city auditor. That should say the state auditor.
Okay. Got it.
Okay, with that change, are you making a motion?
I can. I move that we approve the consent agenda with the change that I suggested.
Okay, I have a motion for the consent agenda. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Is that you, Danny?
I think we got two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Danny, you've been rather quiet, so I'll give that to you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Very good. Let's move on to city reports and business. Mr. Goodwin, start with you and go down the line.
Okay, in recreation notes, we're in the final week of junior jazz registration. Games start in early January, so make sure you sign up as the offices are closed this Thursday and Friday for the Thanksgiving holiday, so we can help with any issues that you have. The golf course is winding down. The weather has kind of put a damper on it. It's kind of forced us to close the course a little more than we'd like, but we are trying to stay open until December 9th is our goal. Ski bus registration is still open, and so make sure you get your kids signed up if you're interested in that. But one note is we already are full for chaperones, so we don't need any more chaperones. We are entering the winter period, so we put snow parking signs out throughout the community to inform the residents of the parking restrictions as far as snow. I'll let Mayor Gigi touch on this, but the Lone Peak Public Safety District did appoint a new chief tonight. And then finally, the city received plans for a subdivision called Phase 5 Plat E. It's a part of the Cedar Hills townhomes. The original townhomes were approved in 2002, and they're making some minor changes to the proposal. If you have questions, please direct them to staff. We'd be happy to discuss this. I know this is an item of concern for some residents. So if you have residents reaching out to you with questions, please direct them to staff. We'd love to help.
Has it been by the commission?
Yes. In 2002, it went through the conceptual, preliminary, and final stages. They're making some proposed changes.
But not recently.
Not recently. It's on the planning commission agenda for next week.
Okay, thank you very much. Mrs. Rich, do you have anything?
Just that the state of the city should be going to the designer by the end of next week. I didn't hear anything back from council, so the city was good with it.
Thank you. Mrs. Anderson?
Yeah.
I will take just a minute or two. We appointed a new fire chief tonight, Andrew Thompson, come from South Jordan. And so we're impressed with him. Made a recommendation last week. They were able to consummate the contract, so that's finished. And
that's
it. Mr. Geddes, you have anything to add? Okay, Mr. Baylor, Mr. Paula?
I do have one report. So we had a Parks and Trails meeting last week. They are on track to run the 97, which is going to be December 4th, on season 7. They are working on getting a list of homes that will receive awards for having Christmas decorations up front. So if you haven't yet, put up your home, now will be the time to do that. And then they also talked about next year's budget. They'll be putting together a proposal that the city council receives so they can know what to do the next fiscal year. And they talked about the request for proposals that would go out for park maintenance, and they expressed a desire to have staff consult with the Parks and Trails Committee on the contents of that request for proposals.
Okay.
They had, in particular, some concerns about maintaining our trees properly. There are some areas where trees have died, and they wanted to be able to figure out who is going to be responsible for checking on and maintaining trees, especially when they're newly planted. And we weren't sure if that was in the Parks contract, or if that felt to be the public works. And they wanted to consult on making sure the plans for managing our parks were
I think that's a good point. So that will be included in discussions. All right. That is it for city reports and business. Move on to item number 10, which is an action item. And so Ms. Mulvey, if you wanted to move the mic, take care of the canvassing, are you ready for that?
Okay. This is the last official act for the election that was held on November 7th. And this is where the city council acts as the board of canvassers and verifies and certifies the results that were given on the tallies from the county. It came in today. You all have a spreadsheet in front of you. So I'm going to ask that the mayor, Councilmember Geddes, Bailey, and Zapala verify these numbers on your sheets as I read them here. And then we have you four signing. You two, I'm not having involved because you are actually on the ballot. So very quickly, we'll go through the four-year term for mayor. Jenny Reese's votes were there, and as noted, Kurt Crosby was disqualified. So I'm just going to read the totals that I have per precinct and the total votes. So Cedar Hills 1, I have 228. Cedar Hills 2, I have 312. Cedar Hills 3, 322. Cedar Hills 4, 307. Cedar Hills 5, 293. That brings a total of 1,462 votes. Okay, we'll move on to the council members. And Maurice Fernando Navarro was disqualified, so we're only going to count the votes for Ben Ellsworth and Denise Anderson. So for Cedar Hills 1, for Ben, 194. Denise, 218. Cedar Hills Precinct 2, Ben, 244. Denise, 266. Cedar Hills 3, Ben Ellsworth has 273. Denise Anderson has 280. Cedar Hills 4, Ben Ellsworth 218, Denise Anderson 235, Cedar Hills 5, Ben Ellsworth 210, Denise Anderson 323. That makes Ben's total 1,139, Denise's total 1,322. Then the second page is the park tax, proposition number 7. We have votes for and against. Cedar Hills Precinct 1, I'll write down the for the park tax first. Cedar Hills 1 is 160. Cedar Hills 2 is 237. Cedar Hills 3, 254. Cedar Hills 4, 216. And Cedar Hills 5, 238, with a total of 1,105 votes for the park tax, against the park tax. Cedar Hills 1, 158. Cedar Hills 2, 179. Cedar Hills 3, 133, Cedar Hills 4, 267, Cedar Hills 5, 188, with a total of 925 votes against the park tax. So as the Board of Canvassers, those numbers jive with what I'm sitting on the certified report that I'm going to ask you to sign. I also would need a motion, and the motion should include declaring those who have the most votes as elected, and then approving the or declaring the proposition 7 that it is approved. And a motion is right there in the memo. I just wanted to read it right off there.
Thank you. So, if someone would like to make a motion on the canvassing, then I will take that.
I move that we accept and certify the results of 2017 municipal general election canvass. Declare four-year term mayor candidate Jenny Reese and four-year term city council candidates Denise Anderson and Ben Ellsworth to be elected, and declare the Cedar Hills Park Tax Proposition Number 7 to be approved.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Just again, a second, sit. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is unanimous. We congratulate the new council members and mayor. Thank you very much. It was unanimous.
It's not, it's not blue.
Okay.
If you'll just sign on that and pass it down, that'll be the final report. Thank you.
All right, next item is item number 12. This is also an action item. This is an ordinance amending 503, chapter 1, article 3, premises and occupations. Mr. Cooper?
Okay, so this premises occupation code is not something that as a staff we deal with very often. It seems like this code was passed for one specific purpose, and that was to allow Shelley School of Irish Dance to operate. Looking at it, there's a few requirements that only a few homes in Cedar Hills would meet the premises occupation code that currently sits. You have to live on a major arterial road and have ingress and egress on the road. There's only one arterial road in the city that's Canyon Road, and every home that is has any sort of is adjacent to Canyon Road in any way north of Cedar Hills Drive does not have ingress and egress to the Canyon Road. So this really only applies to homes that are fronting on the Canyon Road between Murdoch Canal and Cedar Hills Drive. As it currently sits, we put together a quick map just showing you who currently meets these provisions and then which lots would also meet the provisions as changed. The current code requires that each lot be at least 1 acre in size. We're making three proposed changes to this code. Big one I feel like is the change in the required acreage. Right now the code says 1 acre. We're proposing a step to look at it and feel like this were reduced to a half an acre, but it still meets the intent of the code. The intent of the code is to allow people on these busier routes to have some sort of commercial business, but the idea is that it still maintains the integrity of the residential neighborhood. I feel like that by switching it to a half an acre, you are still meeting the intent of that code. The other changes are, back when we approved our conditional use code, we said that premises occupations would be approved by staff. This code calls out the Planning Commission as the approval. Currently, as it stands, the newer code trumps the older code, so when we get an application, it would be staff that approves it. So we're just, the language needs to be integrated here, so the approval body needs to be stated as the state's, the city's, the approval by the city business license commission. And then the final requirement is, and this is another provision I feel like was carved out of this, specific to the Shelley School of Irish Dance, and that they want one of the kids or individuals. In a home business occupation, we require that those individuals that work one on one with kids or elderly have a BCI background check. In the case of every premises occupation, that may not be necessary. However, where it is necessary, we want to continue to have that provision, but not require it where it's not needed. So in the case of the application that we have, it's for a bike shop. They're not going to be working one-on-one with individuals or with the elderly. So we don't feel like a BCI background check is necessary. So that would be subject to the provisions outlined in Chapter 1, Section C of this title, Section Title 3, which does state that BCI background check is required for businesses that work one-on-one with children or elderly individuals. Those are the proposed changes to the premises occupation code. I hope you have a chance to review it. What questions do you have for me?
So real quick, on the, if we change the approval body to be the business license official, remind me who the appeal body is then.
Anyone else have questions for Mr. Goodwin? If not, there is a staff suggested motion on this, and I will take that.
I move that we approve ordinance 11-21-2017A, amending Cedar Hill City Code 3-1E related to premises occupations.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Yes,
Mrs. Anderson seconds it. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
I think it's to be roll call votes in the ordinance.
Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Mrs. Anderson?
Aye.
Mr. Geddes?
Aye.
Mr. Bailey?
Aye.
Mr. Zappala?
Aye.
Thank you. Move on to item number 13, which is also an action item. This is on signage for Walmart. Mr. Goodwin, go ahead.
Walmart's applied for some changes to their exterior signage, which you can find in your packet. Those changes are, some of them are, as far as the signage is concerned, major changes from what was originally approved. and some of them are very, very minor. One of them is actually a new sign. One of the sign changes is, one I feel is very, very minor, is the changing outdoor living to lawn and garden. I think that is a neat change. The reason this is before the City Council and the reason I went to the Planning Commission was that from the original approval documents that Walmart had in 2006, what they're proposing is a change to the, it's not brick, I need to emphasize that they're not putting brick in this case. There's a, some tan, dark tan stucco where their current Walmart signage is found over their entrance. And they want to change that to the Walmart blue. I don't know what the exact name of that color is. And then other Walmarts in the area, you may know, do the online ordering and pickup. And they will find in your documents, you see that they'll usually paint the corner of the building from the ground level to the top orange, identifying that area as the online pickup. They're only proposing to have what they are calling a badge, an orange badge designating the northwest corner as the pickup area. So those are the changes that they're proposing. Are you a representative from Walmart?
I am.
So I don't have a name, so I'm sorry. I invite the council to ask Rebecca any questions that she may have. Or I can answer any questions.
So, we discussed this a little bit more session, but I'd just like to reiterate that not all for the change if they want to change to this color scheme of the building. This is stuck up in the candies if we get it back.
I wasn't here for work session, I'm sorry. So I don't know if anybody wants to speak after me, but I've been reading our city code, and I guess it comes down to, for me, whether this color is a private sign or private. Code says that earth tones shall dominate color schemes in the building. All color schemes shall be developed so as to form the established by the team. Additionally, color schemes shall be consistent with those found in the surrounding areas. If we're talking about building code, I would say this would violate code. If we're talking about a sign, then there's nothing to sign for this if you don't have a sign. So it comes out of that for me. I mean, I'm sympathetic, but I don't want a business to. I don't want us to dictate business as to the style of their logo, but I'm stuck on it. I'm going to paint the deal. Not hanging the sign.
Is this a question for me?
No, this is a comment about the council, but I'd love your council opinion.
To me, it looks like it's part of the sign.
Yeah, I think that area above the entrance doors to me is the signage area. My concern is the pickup sign, the pickup badge. That is brick over there. I'd love to see, like, maybe a sign attached, maybe that can light up. So when it gets dark, you know, it gets dark early here in the winter, and I think pickup ends at 7. It's dark around 5 here in the winter. There were a sign on that corner that lit up that said pickup instead of painted on the brick. I just think the painted brick looks a little tacky. This is the prettiest Walmart ever. And I just don't want to do something that's going to make it look, you know, tacky, tickly, and the integrity of this building. So that's a concern.
I can take that back to them and let them see if they want to do some type of sign. They would probably be more inclined to actually hang a sign, I would think, instead. So then we're looking at having a banner out there. Probably
a banner instead of a banner.
They could do it with metal or whatever. Just,
you know, actually,
it's
that design.
Yeah.
Would you be okay with the sign attached to it, but without the lights?
Yeah. I feel better about that than painted brick.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sure that's something that they could easily work with and see if they get attached. We just want to be able to call out and have it pick up if it's an available option for it.
Any other questions for our Walmart representative or challenge? If not, there is a suggested motion on this item as well.
Did you want me to say, tell you what I said in work session?
Yes,
sure. So we talked about this briefly, but I looked at the heart sign, and it has a silver and red background, which is in the earth tone. But you're right, it's part of the actual sign. It's not painting behind it. But I did agree with Denise that, and everyone else, that that whole entrance right behind where it says Walmart appears to be part of their overall signage. And so the concerns that I expressed were that I don't want to be difficult to work with when it comes to developers, and we have, you know, our commercial zone is going to be moving forward, so is the one across the street from us, and so I want to stick with our colonial aspects, but I'm willing to compromise on the signage, especially since that is the branding for these individual companies. But I would also prefer to have an actual sign instead of painting the brick.
Any other comments or questions?
I'll make a motion.
Please.
I move that we approve the change to propose current Walmart signage, subject to that we take back to Walmart corporate that would like an actual sign and not paint the brick. And we do welcome the pickup area. I know that was discussed in our work session too. Several people mentioned that they welcome when that comes to our Walmart. And it will be used.
The online version. That is the greatest thing ever.
We're pushing on prior.
Thank you. So I have a motion. Is there a second? Mr. Bailey, thank you. Mr. Bailey seconds it. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. This is not an ordinance. Mr. Sapala.
Nay.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Anderson.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
So there was 4 ayes, 1 nay. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Thank you very much. Mr. Zappala was the nay. Let's move on to item number 14, which is also an action item on acceptance of the 2017 fiscal year audit. Mr. Rowley and Mr. Lowe are probably the ones to present. So go right ahead.
I don't take a lot of time. I just want to thank the auditors for responding quickly to the thing I asked them. When I was getting the report together, they reviewed it very quickly. Stephen does a great job at getting back on emails and getting back and getting the suggestions. So that's my 2 cents. He can say what he wants about the audit.
Thank you, Charles, Mayor, members of the council. My name is Stephen Rowland. I'm representing Kennington and Christensen, who are the auditors for this last fiscal year. I was engaging a partner over this audit. There are a few things we're required to present to you as those who are in charge of the governance. You're responsible for financial reporting and how that's the money coming in is being tracked and how it's going to be reported. And so we are reporting this audit to you. As I mentioned, as you're required by state law, you're required to have a financial statement audit every fiscal year. So even though you have an audit, it does not relieve you of your responsibility for financial reporting and governance over the entity. The audit should not be relied upon to be the end-all, catch-all, and correction of all financial statements. So in addition to your responsibilities having governance, I should say because you have that responsibility, you hire Charles and the rest of the accounting staff of the city to look over the finances and make sure they're reported and reported properly in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles, which they are. Charlotte does a great job. He's real sharp. It's pretty rare that you find cities prepare their own CAFR, which is above and beyond the required financial statement that is required by state law. So it's kind of above and beyond. There's a lot more information in there. So it's pretty rare for cities to have their own staff.
That was me.
That's a great job. They do a wonderful job. It seems like in working with them that they do have the best interest of the city's finances at heart as they're doing this. So appreciate them and their efforts for that. Our responsibility as auditors is to plan and perform the audit so that we can obtain reasonable rather than absolute assurance about whether the financial statements are free of material misstatement. And if you have a copy of your report, whether electronic, hopefully electronic, as a gift, that's pretty good. But our opinion is on page 11. And it does say, in our opinion, the basic financial statements referred to above present fairly in all material respects the respective financial position of the governmental activities, the business type activities, each major fund, and the aggregate remaining fund information of the City of Cedarville, Utah as of June 30th, 2017, and the respective changes in financial position and where applicable cash flows thereof, and the respective budgetary comparison for the general fund and the Gulf Special Revenue Fund for the year then ended, in accordance with accounting principles generally accepted in the United States of America.
Can I?
What page was that?
Page 11.
Can I interrupt 1 second? There is, we did not put this in the packet, it is online. There's a link in your packet that will take you to the online document. Sorry.
Thank you. And it is available, like I said, it's on the city's website. I don't think I saw it the other day as well, as it's available on the state auditor's website. So there are two different locations there. So if you have any questions as you're looking through it and you can't see it tonight, write them down and you can send Charlene an email and he can forward it on to me if you have any questions specifically.
We use the code of finances keeps me awake. Please
stay away from it. Stay away. Riveting stuff, people. Okay, so basically that paragraph is a clean opinion over the financial statements of the City of Cedar Hills. And that is the cleanest opinion, the best opinion you can receive on your financial statements. In addition to that, because this is a government entity, it's required that we perform the audit in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards, and we have our report on that, which is clear in the back on page 109. And in essence, this report states that we consider the internal controls of the city to determine the scope and extent of the testing, but we are not required to test internal controls to be able to give an opinion on those controls. However, as we looked at the internal controls, there were no deficiencies or weaknesses in those internal controls. So we feel the city has strong internal control policies and good controls over the money coming in and going out and make sure that it's being recorded properly. In addition to that, the state auditor requires that firms, auditors, would go in and do certain testing over state compliance requirements. And that report is found on page 111. And it has a list of about a handful of compliance requirements that are there. For example, there's budgetary compliance, fund balance, Utah retirement systems, restricted taxes, Open Public Meetings Act, treasurer's bond, and cash management. Those are the specific areas that were required to be tested this last year for the City of Cedar Hills. And as we went through that, we didn't find any deficiencies or weaknesses or instances of non-compliance related to any of those. So there are no findings in relation to state compliance. In our opinion, in relation to compliance on these things, in our opinion, the City of Cedar Hills complied in all material respects with the compliance requirements referred to above the year end of June 30, 2017. And we also just want to make sure you're aware this is not a legal determination of compliance. But in terms of testing, as outlined in the state compliance audit guide, there were no instances of non-compliance, excuse me. Additionally, a few other things that we're required to report to you, some qualitative items. We did not encounter any significant difficulties in performing the audit. Charlotte was great to work with. He had everything ready for us on day one, ready to go, and he was very quick to get us the information that we did need. So the audit this year went extremely smoothly, and we really appreciate the efforts of him and his staff in doing that. There were no disagreements with management during the audit, and there were no material uncorrected misstatements at the end of the audit. We are also not aware of management consulting with other auditors about the audit, and as I mentioned about earlier, there is no findings or recommendations this year. So whether state financial statement related or state compliance, there are no findings. So clean opinion all around. That is my report. Are there any questions from there?
Any questions or statements for Mr. Raleigh?
I would just like to say I'm super impressed. I've not been audits all my career. The findings of zero is incredible. I think we should not overlook what Sean does in our finance.
Thank you, Mr. Buck. All right. There is a very simple motion on this. Would someone like to use the suggestion or make one on their own? Go right ahead.
I move that we accept the 2017 annual financial report and give confidence and thanks to Charlotte and his team.
I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Bailey seconds it. Any further discussion? Have a vote. Mr. Zafalsky.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Anderson.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. move on to item number 15, which is also an action item, an ordinance amending Title 10, Chapter 7, Section 2 relating to building plans. Mr. Mott, go ahead.
Yes, Mayor and Council. This item has been presented by the Building Department to address the confusion that we feel is in the building code, clarifying what the documents and submittals are for building permit applications. We proposed additional language be added to City Code Section 10-7-2, clarifying that building permits and other documents will be prepared by a professional, a registered design professional, with an exception that those plans being submitted and built according to the International Residential Code prescriptive methods would not be required to be prepared by a registered design professional.
Jeff, I'm not a registered design professional, but let's see, I can do adequate work and get you what you need. I mean, did you not accept those?
There's some confusion on the plan review process, because if they're not prepared by the design professional for a commercial application.
Okay, I get a commercial, is that what?
Yes, this would only
just
be
commercial.
Commercial would be required by
and
professional
what,
design.
So what's a professional? Is it
an architect, engineer, a license, the
license,
architect.
What are the surrounding communities? Do they follow this? Or
my understanding when I question the building department, they are all requiring this item, but according to a section in the building code, it's specified that it's only required if it's been adopted by the city code, or city code specifies that has to be completed by a design professional. Cedar Hills in the past has always required it, but it was questioned. In the department, that's what brought to my attention that we cannot require that, but on the other hand, we're unable to complete plan review process without it. And so, in order to assist those people making the application and those people that are reviewing the plans, we feel that it would be beneficial to both sides to re-clarify that commercial plan as submitted will be done by a design professional, and we need to clarify on the other end of it that residential plan according to the residential code does not need to be.
And that includes like an outbuilding such as Ms. Rollins' shoe.
Correct. Anything that was designed and built in an international residential code would not be required to be designed by a design professional.
Can you explain where in the code it explains that? Because I'm reading the section of code and it just talks about building permits for any building within the territory. It doesn't say anything about commercial or commercial.
Which
so I'm reading chapter 10-7. Because this is amendment 172.
Yes. And right now it says that they'll be submitted for
on the street. If there's any person, partnership, firm, or corporation designing a constructor model and move a building or structure within the territory from the county official zone map, to the extent of $100 or more in replaceable value, shall make a special application, therefore, to chief building official before commencing construction. So it sure sounds to me like this is applying to all permits for all buildings.
It is.
And so if we're amending right under that 172, this is also the problem.
Yes. That's why the language that we're proposing has an exception. That there would be an exception included.
Okay,
now.
Thank you. That was the piece that was missing.
The residential would not need to do that.
Any other questions or comments for Mr. Maher? Staff has recommended motion. Someone like to make it? I'll take it now.
I don't see it. I don't have it in my back.
I would like to make a motion to approve ordinance number 11-21-2017B, amending city code section 10-7-2 related to building plans subject to no changes that we have mentioned. So, just as it's written and suggested.
Thank you. I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Sepala seconds. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mrs. Anderson.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. DePaul.
Aye.
Motion is unanimous. Thank you very much. Moving on. Item number 16, action item on an ordinance amending Title 4, Chapter 2, Section 3, nuisance relating to weeds. Mr. Goodwin, proceed.
So this piece came about as the discussion on the parcel commenced. A lot of the residents that are adjacent to that piece were dissatisfied with the weed abatement ordinance and the city's ability to enforce. So staff took a look at it and looked at a number of other cities' codes as it related to weed abatement. And we felt like the conundrum that we're in is that we have a hillside, the city owns a lot of land on the hillside, and we don't want to pass a code that requires us to send our summer help up the hillside with weed eaters, and we whack 50 acres of their land. So it needed to be, there needed to be some provisions where the city could exempt some land, but the question was how do you do that? So basically what we're proposing is a complete revamping of the definition of our weeds. We're proposing that the entire weed definition as it is be mixed. We retain the reference to the Utah State Code where they define what a weed is. We retain that, but now let me go through the code. It says what the proposed code is. It says weeds on any property shall be eradicated by chemicals, cutting, or some other except other methods that do not exceed 6 inches in height. Two, weeds that are rotted, tilled, plowed, or harrowed shall be buried under the soil as part of eradication. And three, this is where it gives some jurisdiction of the city. It says that the zoning administrator determines that the large size of the property makes cutting of all the weeds impractical. The zoning administrator may issue an order limiting the required cutting of weeds to a fire break of not less than 15 feet in width around any structures and around the complete perimeter of the property or part thereof, except as allowed by subsection 4 of this section. So 4 allows for an owner of property to make a written request to the city, which may exempt them. So and the city would go out there, inspect the property, determine if it's a fire hazard, and maybe even consult the fire marshal as needed, and make a recommendation there. And then 5, there would be an exemption for livestock, pastures, and that area. This would apply to all zones. Currently, the code reads it's residential and commercial, and you see that we have like the Oak Grove parcel, which is in the public facility zone, which we can carve out an exception for. This applies to all the zones and all the properties in all the zones. So we feel like it does give the city a bit of latitude, but also it allows us to enforce as needed to determine those fire hazards. So with that, any questions?
Questions, comments? If none, I'll take a motion.
I move to approve ordinance 11-21-2017. C, amending Sugar Hill City Code 4-2-3 related to weeds with no change.
Thank you. I have a motion. Is there a second?
Go ahead.
Mrs. Anderson seconds it. Any further discussion? Okay, let's have a vote starting from my right. Mr. Sepala.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Anderson.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Motion is unanimous. Thank you. Moving on now to our last action item of the night, which is on the golf cart lease agreement.
Thank you, Mayor. As discussed in the work session, we are due up to turning our golf carts in a couple weeks. And as such, we need to enter into a new agreement. The one that we have proposing is the new lithium ion battery golf carts. There's zero battery maintenance that's required. We've set this 48% on our electric bills. Charge time is half the time as the current ones. It saves us approximately 180 hours per year on maintenance for our mechanic, who does a lot of work for us, and we're appreciative of him. We would be extending the lease for 4 to 5 years because the batteries are covered for the entire duration of the 5 years. And again, as mentioned, we will be going, we go from a car that's 328 pounds, batteries to 49 pounds, because that much is eco-friendly. Obviously, would protect our turf, and we are proposing to reduce from 80 to 78 in order to fit it into our budget next year. Any questions?
Excellent, Mark. I just have a comment.
Okay.
I like it.
Thank you.
Anyone else have a comment or a question?
Hey, I mean, go 80 to 78, I mean, does that really affect the I mean, if they're really fine, then,
yeah. Because of the issues that we won't have them down as much.
And do we still own the drink cart?
No, we sold it during this.
Yeah. So we don't own that anymore.
We do not. They have
so we're not responsible for anything there.
We still have the four seaters. The top four seaters.
Yeah. And we all those.
We do own.
And the regular battery.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, in fact, we just replaced those batteries too.
It seems like a no-brainer. I'm excited to see the parts.
Yeah, it's going to be real nice. Like I said, we demoed it. The testimonial you have from the gentleman, Jack Papadatta, he did a professional job, they love it, they haven't had any issues. Obviously, they're in a destination area in California, I guess, but even further, any issues they've had, RMT, he said, came out immediately, took them, fixed them, dropped
them. I have one more question after you from work session. Are they also the auto brakes?
Yeah, exactly. Still the same.
Yeah, for sure.
And it'll maintain, it'll go at least 54 holes. So, if we ever had
a double shot, is there a renewal option on this? I mean, could we go another year or two at the end of this? Or?
You know, I don't know the answer to that.
Right.
Possibly, and then you would draw up early, we would purchase the accessories, the additional accessories that we're on the budget.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Okay, I'd like to make a motion, Greg.
Aye. To approve the proposed lease agreement between Cedar Hills Golf and R&D for the lease of 70 cars for a period of 6 months.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mrs. Reese, is that you?
Yes.
Mrs. Reese, second. Any further discussion? Seven votes. Start with Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mrs. Anderson.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Yes.
Mr. Baller.
Aye.
Motion is unanimous. Thank you. So our last action item of the night. We'll move on to our last item, which is a discussion. Thank Council Member Holbrook for being here. Waste Management. Mr. Goodwin, you're going to talk to us about the RFQs.
Yes. We have two contracts that are set to expire, as mentioned in the work session, between the next 2 to 6 months. Our first maintenance contracts with Wilkinson Outdoor Maintenance is set to expire in this calendar year, and then our agreement with Waste Management is set to expire at the end of April. In both of these cases, we as a staff, we feel like it would be best practice to go out to bid. It's been a number of years since we've been out to bid on either issue, on either service. And let's talk about the parks maintenance contract real fast first. In that, Council Members Paul, I really appreciate the suggestion of Parks and Trails Committee. My understanding of the way the current agreement works, Charlotte and Jeff can chime in if they feel that I correct it, but the parks maintenance contract is really focused on turf maintenance. He's not our full-time arborist. In many cases, we've hired out tree cutting services to third parties to do that. With that being said, that is something that we can definitely look at as part of the contract. Maybe it's an add-on that the city looks at and decides on later. We've done that before. It has contracts in there. But a portion of it that can be removed in the final agreement. That is something that definitely can be part of the consideration. My question to you and maybe to Charlotte is, when is the next Parks and Trails Committee meeting?
It's not for a few months. They just had the last one.
I asked just because if they're going to give feedback as part of the process, it might be done.
It could be done through
And I'm happy to have them send them the RFP terms and have them give some feedback. That's just about to go ahead and be ready to go out. You had just got the red line from Mr. Shaw the other day, and we're updating the document to be what we feel like is best in the best interest of the city. So, are there any questions on the parks maintenance RFP?
Yeah, I didn't. Yes. I had a question I thought about after the session.
Yeah.
So, if we got an indication, Wilkinson, are they going to bid again?
Wilkinson?
Wilkinson, correct.
Yes, they will.
He warned us it's going to be a 20% increase.
He just warned us that it's going to be an increase. So,
we shouldn't show us cards.
Well, whatever. I mean, it we've said it publicly before, but it is what it is. That's not our best number, but he has been the cheapest, but he does great work.
No, all I can say about that is a couple years ago, well, at least not this season, but we received a lot of complaints about the weed whacking around trees and stuff, and I think they really curbed that this year. So I think they listened to us. Is that right, Jeff? Would you agree?
Yes.
They have taken an application to remove the grass from the base of the tree, so they're not trimming in that area anymore.
So over that point, I'm appreciative of them, and I welcome their new proposal, and anyone else that would like to bid in our city.
And one thing to keep in mind with the parks maintenance is a lot of times when bidding, this is what we need to be careful with the RFP, is what it states is that the maintenance contracts will be for mowing and trimming, and then irrigation maintenance will be a completely separate build as needed. Wilkinson has done both of those as part of the agreement. And we feel like it's best practice, it's in the best interest of the city for that to be going forward. So it's important to me at least that as we drop the contract, that the irrigation portion of the contract is part of the contracting process. It's not going to happen. So we're going to anticipate those costs.
And if I could say one thing about that too, just because if sprinkler heads and things are broken as a result of whoever's maintaining our facilities, mowers hitting them, that should not come back to the city as a cost. Now, if it's vandalism, kids, you know, under things or busting or whatever, that's included in there. So I don't know how you state that, but we need to make sure we're clear on that. And then I would almost like, I think you could separate that RFP and like, if it is time and materials on fixing sprinklers, you know, if it's a lot, I don't know what we spent over the years on that. I mean, they just, Wilkinson, I know sometimes just does it, right?
It's all included right now.
Right? So if they're not going to do that and they're going to charge time materials, I would like to know their fee schedule. I would like to know what their hourly rates for their labor that works on it. And so if we have hours, you know, they say, okay, this month we had 10 hours in sprinkler repairs, and then here's the receipts for the parts, plus some sort of fee or whatever from it. Right? I mean, that's only fair, I think, is how you could keep the cost.
From a budgeting standpoint, it's nice with Chris's contract as it states that he can anticipate the fees throughout the entire year, or they fluctuate based on his contract. He's been paid more in the summer than in the winter, but we can anticipate that budget for that. So that there's a big question mark on irrigation being how much is this going to cost us? It's not part of the contract. That's a concern to me.
And is it a big deal? I mean, are we spending a lot?
Currently, it is included in his contract. So he replaces and repairs all the sprinkler systems, timers, et cetera, at his expense. Whether
that's
he damages
part of his money. That's just part of his money.
Yeah, it's part of the contract.
So, I mean, that's impressive because, I mean, has he ever come to us and said, man, this is really screwed up. We got, you know, this is a lot more than I can do.
He came to us probably 2-3 years ago and asked for a larger increase in budget for that. But then the contract stipulates a year-over-year increase is to be expected. And that would be part of the terms as well.
Well, we really changed our systems.
We do have language in the contract addressing the sprinkler system, irrigation system, in which the city is responsible for everything 4-inch in size or larger. We have very few of, but everything less than 4 inches, then he maintains, including the controllers. And we have had instances where we work together to to fix areas in which there was a mixture of the two in a valve system or something where we went both small and large diameter pipes. So yes, we have worked on that, but it's been minimal. I'm thinking less than $800 a year.
Any questions on the park maintenance site? Okay. The second contract is with our municipal solid waste collection, and the city has been with, as I mentioned in the work session, the city has been with Waste Management for, going back to that contract back in 91, Waste Management for a long time. And one thing that I will say about Chris or Wilkinson's outdoor maintenance and Waste Management is it's really nice. And Kurt and Tom, for that matter, it's really nice when you have a professional services contract and after the agreement, they are receptive to feedback from residents, from the council, from staff, and they make an effort to be a part of the community. And I feel like Chris has done that, and Waste Management has done that as well, as far as being a sponsor for the family festival. So our Waste Management contract, the current contract we have, was approved in 2011. It had a term of 5 years that expired in 2016. In 2016, there was an extension for 2 years. That 2-year extension is set to expire on April 30th, 2018. There's only language in the contract for one extension period, and that's why, as a staff point, it's important to go out to a bid. And as mentioned in the work session, the big cost in going up to bid for waste services is the cans. It's a logistical problem of do you buy the cans from the old provider, do you have them come pick them up and have a new provider come and drop off cans? And then there's always the problem of getting schedules right. You know, I mentioned in the work session about the 2009-2006 decision studies that Waste Management has a really low customer satisfaction in the city. And Mrs. Dorsey, I think that it's really important when a professional service wants to be involved in the community and get it right. And we see that from being one of the lowest rated in 2006 to 2007, 2009, to being easily the highest rated service that the city offers as far as the utility service in 2015 says a lot about the desire of Waste Management to be a part of the community. So to me, that is an important aspect of this whole process. I really appreciate Beth Holbrook being here tonight. So I would entertain, I would ask that you entertain questions from her from Waste Management point of view. It's also a good time to talk to the president of the OCTC. So,
I'll wear the green hat first.
Councilmember Kwan.
Thank you very much for letting me speak this evening. I appreciate it. I wanted to say, and this is in no way anything other than exactly what it is. I think you guys have one of the best city managers. I admire Chandler so much and respect him. He's been so great to work with, and I say that knowing that I'm like, you know, I really don't obviously want you to go to RFP. I would prefer to see if there's any opportunity to continue the relationship that we have. I really am working with our drivers and everyone else. And, you know, it's great when you get people that are really passionate about what they do. And believe it or not, our garbage truck drivers, because I go there at their 5 a.m. meetings, and I get an opportunity to see them. And they know your cities. And they really, really are responsive. And they really take pride in being responsive. And I would love to see if there is an opportunity. One of the things that I think is challenging, I know that Chandler brought up House Bill 19 in the work session. I'm not going to really talk about that unless you have specifics. But one of the things that I think is really defining for Waste Management right now is we are also in the recycling business, and we actually have MRF, the Materials Facility Recovery, in West Jordan, and there are only two in the state. And so that has helped us to really understand and know the dynamics of the recycling market, which can get a little tricky. My competitors have had to increase their fees mid-contract as a result of some of those challenges within the recycling market, simply because when you're not directly controlling it, obviously you are at the behest of what's going on in terms of the actual marketing for recycling commodities right now. I'd love to see an opportunity for us to continue to work together and to continue to serve us or to serve you. I love to talk to Greg every time I get a meet on the phone. Yes, it's a family. It's a family event thing, and I really like that. And this is where I think that we really are starting to shine as waste management, and we want to continue to provide you guys with the utmost service. And so if there is an opportunity to not go to RFP, obviously that would be great, but I do understand and respect your positions. I understand how this works on both sides, but I would love to just keep us as we are going, because we want to continue to be your number one service provider. We are like so excited about the fact that, yes, we are up there at the top. So I'll entertain any questions that you guys have. I'm happy to talk about recycling in general and specifics, and then of course anything else that you guys have questions on.
Council members?
I would love having walked me through this report on recycling here. And maybe explain what we can do to meet the goal. It looks like we're not meeting our goal. There's three other issues meeting our goals.
So,
recycling report.
2016
or 2017? It says 2016.
Okay, perfect. So, the recycling goals are just, they are that. They are goals. And we like to kind of gauge what the community feel for recycling is. It kind of makes a loose goal on that model. Right now, we would love to see an increase in the number of residents who are who have recycling containers. That's, I think, where we can work towards a goal that might be even more effective than having the 50%. That's what you're talking about, right? It's a 50% goal. That's where we would like to really see you guys shine. That is an opportunity that obviously your residents have enjoyed to have the recycling availability to them. And it's an important thing. We see this in a lot of different communities that they want to have it, and they want to balance out what their costs are and where they can, you know, provide what it is that residents are wanting right now and still manage the cost effectively. And so we see recycling as an opportunity. If you wanted to continue to develop this goal model, then let's work on doing an increase in that. One of the challenges, so I'm going to take a different perspective for a second. One of the challenges with recycling right now is that China is the largest purchaser of recyclable goods. And worldwide, they roughly purchase about 60%. And so they set the marketing strategies and they set the percentages for what they call residue. Residue is another fancy word for it. It's not going to recycle and it goes into the landfill. And their political nose is out of joint because TPP was not approved once President Trump was elected. And so this was their opportunity. It's really not a political commentary, I promise, but it's their opportunity to kind of just control those market forces, as you will. And they tightened the restrictions in terms of what residue counts. They did go back on that just a couple days ago. It used to be they wanted to tighten it to 3%, which would be extremely difficult. And they've gone about now back to 5% contamination, which is a big thing in the recycling world. Although I know not that exciting right now. But those are some of the factors that impact recycling that you might not always know about, but that's kind of the things that we look at as we are, you know, selling commodities, doing, doing education programs. We like to continue to develop stronger education programs, and that's kind of where we're looking to do that for 2018, just in general, simply because the cleaner the commodity, the better the value. So that is a long, long-winded answer. I hope that helps.
Yeah, I guess I'm just wondering how we can encourage residents to do more recycling, given that our update. You know that some cities have gone with opt-out programs, so they know everybody say no. That's somewhat controversial. I don't know if there are other methods to encourage more recycling.
So there are several other methods. That is obviously the most valuable in terms of participation rate, because the greater the participation rate, obviously the lower the per container costs, and that's really what you're looking towards in terms of, you know, balancing out your value versus your benefits, right? And there are education things that we can implement. They really work at the grassroots if you don't want to do an opt-out program. So for instance, and Orem City has this this individual resident, and this is what we suggest, have a resident who's like super passionate about it, and they're going to go around and they're going to talk at city events, and they're going to say, oh my gosh, you guys got to sign up for this. And I give them all these materials, and they get to really go and interact with all of your residents, and they can actually give you a great pulse of what people are thinking. You know, some people go, oh, I didn't even think about recycling, and it didn't even dawn. Oh my gosh, here's a great opportunity. I would love to be involved. And those are the types of things, like you have them at your family events, you do different types of programs, you put it on your website. Anytime you engage, you get a resident who might be passionate, that's the way to go. And like I said, I give them plenty of materials. I give them opportunities if they're going to go to a city event. I can give them little things. With, like I do with Orem, I will give them little containers that they can hand out, all these different types of things. So there are other options out there than an opt-out program. From a practical perspective, you want to balance it out. You don't want trucks on your streets. You want to optimize the value of those trucks being on the streets, I should say. And so the lower the recycling, the more they're on your streets, not doing the optimum amount. So I hope that answered that question.
Sure. I know someone who's almost done the city council would be the recycling cheerleader.
Yeah. Okay, wait.
I'm just saying, Daniel lived in Oregon. I did live in Oregon. We know what real recycling is.
Oh, yes, I know.
Yeah.
So I feel guilty. I cannot possibly throw away.
Okay, so let me just ask one quick question. So, as I drive around, okay, I'm the person on my entire street that has a recycling can. It's sad, but true, okay? But I'm also wondering, does anybody ever do an audit? Because I know a couple of my neighbors have like 3 or 4 cans, and I think they were like damaged, and then they like got new ones, and then all of a sudden they got 3 cans out there, and then it grows to 4. And does your drivers ever take note of that? I'm just wondering, because my guess is they're not paying for 4 cans.
Well, I would have to go back and look. I don't know the specifics for that level, because I can have my person drill down and give you those totals in terms of
but we do
try to take audits, and we audit the materials as well. For those of you who are well versed in the recycling world, we do audit the materials as well, and so that's how we
are giving you good stuff,
generate those reports. So okay, who here uses Amazon? Thank you. Cardboard. Yes, cardboard is the number one valuable commodity right now, especially with Christmas coming up. So in answer to that, yes, we do get valuable resources out of the recycling. So some have less value, like plastics right now is a little tricky, and that's the ones that China is trying to crack down on. There are other markets, India, Indonesia. They're just not at that percentage of purchasing level. So. So yes.
Right. Any other questions?
I just have a trash question.
You bet.
What costs more to deal with and process, trash or recycles? Like, what is, you're pushing recycling, is it less expensive to process the recycling than the trash?
And that's a good question. One of the things that happens in Utah, which is a unique perspective, I mean, we're relatively speaking in the span of the Wasatch Front, we still have relatively cheap landfill costs. And so if you wanted to just look at this from a pure perspective of a simple A to B model and that type of cost, then technically, technically a landfill obviously is the simplest thing because it doesn't go through a specific process. In recycling, we have we basically dump the entire load onto what we call the tipping floor, and we send it up to several conveyor belts, and we pick through and take all of the valuables. That being said, there are reasons that it has value in that. Number one, of course, this is a personal belief for individuals. It has value because it's being reused. You're not utilizing new services to create an existing product. Number two, it has value simply because there are a lot of uses that what I would call more developing countries utilize the recyclable commodities for. And some of those are, the cardboard is a big thing. I mean, we obviously have I mean, if anybody has an Apple phone or even a Samsung, you recognize that those are built in China and or Indonesia or other countries, and they're using a lot of cardboard. They obviously don't generate that, and so that's the purchasing model. And that's just an easier model. So it again, it's going to come down to kind of, you know, where do you see this as a value for what it is that you believe in? I hate to get too drilled down, but yet it's really important too. I think people do want to say, hey, I would like to do something like this. And I think that this is a relatively inexpensive product. I mean, if, I know this doesn't probably qualify. It's like, what, 3 diet cuts a month, maybe, give or take? As opposed to, you know, the whole coffee analysis that I would, that my other states would use. So that's kind of, I think, where people kind of look at this, is where is this, where do I see the value in that? So I hope that that answers that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Does anyone have any questions?
No, I will thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And that's it for tonight, ladies and gentlemen. I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
Motion, is there a second?
I'll second.
All seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We are adjourned. Thank you very much. Good job.